Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Don Allen. I'm in Studio A, and over Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. Hey, Mr. Edwards, how are you?
Fine, Mr. Allen, and we want to thank once again the voice of Manchester, England, who opens our programs now for us. We appreciate the job that she is doing over there. And boy, since we have brought her aboard and have her introduced, you know, people are kind of asking, well, how, you guys broadcasting in England. So we broadcast around the world.
Yep.
You know, yeah. But
why
what do we got, Don? You know, geez, a lot of violence going on.
A lot of violence in Minneapolis and St. Paul, Mr. Edwards, and I hope we get some of these people popping up on the Facebook Live feed. We're also, the Ron and Don Show is live fed to Facebook via my page. I'll change that eventually when I get in trouble for it. But anyway, we hope that you call in at 347-426-3904. But Mr. Edwards, there's a problem. There's an uptick in shootings in Minneapolis and St. Paul, more so lately in St. Paul, and it seems, again, that folks are pulling past leaders out of the closet to try to solve a problem that was supposed to be solved the last time they pulled them out of the closet. Seems like a recycling of the same ideas. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, I was kind of puzzled by the announcement earlier in the week by the mayor of the city of St. Paul, the African-American mayor, Mr. Carter, Melvin Carter II, that he had brought in a couple of individuals who used to be here. One was Nick Davis, whose name changed his name to Nick Khalif, former firefighter in the St. Paul Fire Department, if you will, as well as the mayor's own father, who is a former St. Paul police officer. And then I saw a whole crowd of individuals who looked like they were jockeying because the announcement had been made on the same day that $750,000 had been awarded to the city of St. Paul to deal with problems on light rail and, downtown St. Paul and et cetera. And then... In the last 4 days, 5 days, I've been hearing statements that people are expecting the God Squad, as an example. Some others are expecting a payday, if you will, maybe as much as $200,000 to bring order to the streets. And by the way, our condolences to the individuals, three individuals, two African Americans and a Latino, Hispanic, shot and killed within about an 8.5 hour period in the city of St. Paul, particularly the Hispanic who was the father of four children, beautiful children, if you will, good Samaritan, coming to help out, if you will, after what appeared to be an automobile accident there in front of his home in a quiet neighborhood there in the central part of St. Paul. Gunned down in the street before his children and his wife, if you will. It's scary. It's really. I've talked to some longtime friends in St. Paul who know the history and et cetera, and they just say that it's terrifying over there. The East Side, Rondo Dale, and the so-called what is now being referred to as the North End, which is Wright Street.
Yes.
So to your question, I'm trying to get a feel. I understand meeting has been going on for the last 5 days with regards to who will be in charge, you know what I mean, who's running. Last time I looked, I thought the mayor was running the city of St. Paul and the chief of police
and
everybody else answered to him. Maybe I was mistaken.
Yeah, and Mr. Edwards, I think it's important that, you know, we broadcast worldwide live every Saturday from the Twin Cities, state of Minnesota. And I think it's important that we frame the situation before we get into the conversation of guns, gun control, violence, based on as it pertains to the city and state. We live in. So I like to real quickly here, Mr. Edwards, play 25 seconds of this WCCO news report that I just uploaded.
All right.
Here we go.
A new report lists Minnesota among the worst states in America for racial inequality. The website 24/7 Wall Street listed Minnesota as the second most unequal state in the country behind Wisconsin. It measured gaps between blacks and white residents in areas like unemployment, income, and home ownership. New at 10, WCCO's Jeff Wagner learned what the numbers mean.
Okay, I just wanted to play that piece to kind of frame the system that is rolling here in the state of Minnesota, more specifically Minneapolis and St. Paul. And it's important for people to know that. That was a report from WCCO. That was not anything that Ron and Don made up. It was from a reputable organization that did the study. And getting back to the point, Mr. Edwards, I don't understand. I mean, you're a historian. You've seen this repeatedly way more times than I have. It's like, what would be the end game for this? Is just this just another play? I mean, the violence is deadly. People are getting killed. But what is the manifest? Is going to look like this time? Will it look like this time to fix this challenge? They always fix it.
Well, first
people,
of all,
so would...
Mr. Allen, let me do this for the purpose of historical clarity. If you will, this is not the first time that the city of St. Paul, as an example, has been caught in the midst of tremendous violence and et cetera. The problem is, though, is that the last time per se before the 1960s was in the 1920s, when actually gangsters, white gangs, and et cetera, controlled St. Paul at every direction, from the mayor and the city council to the chief of police, the sheriff of Ramsey County, and et cetera. I'm talking 1923, 24, 25, 26, 27. So when I hear people, you know, grasping, putting their hands over their mouths like they're in shock that this is something new in St. Paul. It is not new. In the late 1960s, we had serious violence, if you will, in the Rondo neighborhoods along Selby and et cetera. And at that time, you had maybe a little bit more of a sophisticated group of African-American leadership, if you will, who approached the problem and at the same time reminded themselves and their base that there had been a similar kind of problem, but it involved, quote-unquote, the white population. Because what's being talked about now is, unfortunately, as a historian, I must indicate, has a racial flavor to it, a very nasty flavor, if you will. And maybe, you know, someone will call and ask a question of, you know, reasonable intelligence and et cetera about just how many times has St. Paul gone through these kinds of crises with guns, violence, mayhem, and et cetera. And the same historical portfolio holds true for the city of Minneapolis, and then it holds true for the state of Minnesota. You know, this is a state that still has not come clean about the lynching and the murder of African Americans in Duluth, Minnesota, in 1920. I mean, the violence has been here since the settlers and the pioneers came. You know what I'm saying, Don? Now, the end game that you're talking about, I'm not sure, because I'm seeing something that's somewhat troubling to me again as an historian, and that is that everybody's talking about the guns. I just wish that they would talk as much about drugs, particularly in that we're having, you know, each and every day a person within the African American community, the Native American community, are dying from opiates and overdoses and et cetera. And I kind of get the feeling that people are kind of saying, well, you know, the drugs and et cetera, that's kind of okay. We need to deal with the gun violence, if you will. Well, gun violence has been here since Minnesota was a frontier territory, and that would be 1840, 1850. You know what I'm saying, Don? So people need to get a better feel for their history and understanding that the violence that is going on is not anything new, okay? Been there for a long time.
Yes. I absolutely agree. Well, Mr. Edwards, I guess I need to move in this direction because actually we have a caller that's been holding for a minute. I apologize, caller. You mind if we get that call, Mr. Edwards?
But let's go right ahead and get the call, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Okay, they might want to listen in the queue. I'll put her back in the queue. Sorry about that. I just had to check. Yeah, those people that are texting me, please dial 347-426-3904. That's calling number, 347-426-3904. It was very distracting. But getting back on
point.
And we're
looking this morning at the increase and out-of-control violence, both guns and drugs and et cetera, in the city of St. Paul, which also happens to be the capital of the state of Minnesota, if you will. And so I repeat again what I said just seconds ago. I mean, violence is not new here in Minnesota. It was here when Minnesota was a territory. It's here when Minnesota is a state. As I said, in the 1920s, St. Paul was the murder capital of the state of Minnesota with regards to the gangsters, Babyface, Pretty Boy Floyd, Babyface Nelson, and a whole bunch of other gangsters and white thugs and et cetera, who controlled that city. It was known as a hideout. You know, you rob a bank in Oklahoma and drive up to, in your Model T, you drive up to St. Paul and you'd have protection. You know what I mean? And so, I'm just not understanding. I mean, it's a terrible situation. And when you have three people gunned down about 8 hours, 8.5 hours apart, you need to be concerned.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, I was reading those news accounts, and I did watch. I slipped and watched one local channel just to get see what kind of difference there was from the newspaper to the television coverage. And one of the things that I saw in the background at the later reports, people start getting into talking about gun control. But Mr. Edwards, one thing I did not see is a press conference I saw one, but more specifically, some of the flagship agencies or leadership agencies in the black community, or even nonprofit agencies that deal with education in the black community, come up front and really say too much. So this is there's a lot of tension, but then again, where's the representation? Because there's going to have to be some policy.
Well, Don, I cannot disagree. I cannot disagree. As I said before, 4 days ago, as of today, a press conference was held. The chief of police of St. Paul, of course, with the mayor at his side or vice versa, talked in terms of putting together a number of things. In fact, they were talking about putting together a task force. I'm not quite sure what the task force will do, if you will. I saw a lot of faces that I've seen over the years. As I said, I saw at least one individual who was obviously brought back here from Atlanta, Georgia, where he had just, quote-unquote, retired to a couple of years ago, being brought back, being identified as a person that had answers and solutions for the problems. I do know this. I know that there is some infighting going on. At one point, I know that some of the quote-unquote activists from Minneapolis were told that they weren't needed and stay out of St. Paul, if you will. Late yesterday afternoon, sources indicated to me that the kind of a correction had been taken. There was a kind of a coup d'etat. And I will not name the individuals from the Minneapolis side have been told that they are invited and will join the round table, if you will. But this does not include the first group of African-American so-called leadership who were told that they were not wanted in St. Paul. And so you have that kind of battle going on. You have the ecumenical community has been meeting for 4 days in St. Paul, now joined by associates out of Minneapolis to try to, you know, get a handle on this. I do know I cannot go into details for reasons of security, Don, but I know that there are meetings going on with individuals who actually are kind of like the overlords, if you will, OGs, original gangsters, if you will, who really are the people that you're going to have to go through. And I was hoping that, you know, the 347-426-3904 number would already be lighting up with people indicating.
Yeah, we do have some calls. We definitely have some telephone calls holding right now. So,
well, let's get them.
We're ready.
The last one just 7 minutes ago did not want to answer. Let's get them. Let's hear what they're talking about.
Yeah.
I'd like to know what the solutions are.
Yes, caller. Looks like a friend of the show. You're live on the air.
Yes, gentlemen. This is Mr. M. Enjoying your program. As I called in last week, had a wonderful time in the city of Houston, Texas. And it just really pointed out some of the disparities that I see here in the Twin Cities, especially as it relates to black people. For one, they had a very active social club type scene where, you know, you could see majority of African Americans just having fun, just enjoying themselves on a Friday after a long work week. And I don't even see one such venue here in the Twin Cities. I mean, that's just an observation from Houston to Minneapolis. Culturally, we're worse than sad. I can't even, you know, I mean, disparities and no active social lives. It's a real drag here. But I did have one question for Mr. Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've been talking about some of the situations in St. Paul. And I would really like to, if this is something you're willing to do, give me your take on your read on the job that the St. Paul mayor is doing.
Well, the mayor, who has a political background, he's not a part of the Donald Trump syndrome, having never been involved in politics and et cetera. I think that the mayor is trying to do the best that he can with what he has, that he's in partnership with. But what I'm concerned about is this confusion that has emerged in both cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, about the issue that there should not be more police on the streets. Mr. Allen and I talked at the very top of this program, Mr. M, that we, you know, things are getting so bad over here in Minneapolis, if you will, that people are dying, being killed, murdered, and et cetera, and it takes a month for the information to flow out, if you will. You had an individual who was a very respected scientist working for Medtronics. They're not happy at all. I think he had something like 26 patents that he had been involved in the 14 years that he had worked for Medtronics. And you know, it takes over a month for somebody to say, oh, yeah, he was killed in one of the white downtown clubs. But back to your question about the mayor, if you will, he's going to have to pull together a base, if you will. He's also going to have to find a way to get more officers of color, particularly African Americans, into the St. Paul Police Department, if you will. You know, I think you called in a number of months ago, actually it was last year, when you get to a situation where you have no African American female police officers, there's something wrong, okay? Because they are very valued, if you will, and very needed and extremely important to dealing with the problems that you're dealing with on the street of the city. And when that happened, I was a little bit shaken as it pertains to what Mayor Carter was looking at or how he was being advised and et cetera. And then by and large, to your question again, the support base that the first African-American mayor for the city of St. Paul should have had with him was some of the same people that are talking about they're going to get guns off the street and et cetera. And as I just said to my associate, I find it interesting and troubling that we don't hear the same kind of fervor, you understand, when we're talking about narcotics, and they're dying left and right. We just had a 16-year-old Somali student at South High School died instantly, suddenly, if you will, from a overdose, if you will. And someone gave him some laced pills, if you will, told him to crush him up, make him powdery, and snuff it up his nose. He did that and was dead within a minute and a half. There are far too many of those kinds of deaths taking place. So in the case of Mayor Carter, I just think that, you know, that the individuals who say that they are about to take to the streets and they're going to deal with the problem of gun violence and et cetera, I hope their agenda is a little bit broader than that. And I hope that it includes some of the things that you have said on occasions when you called in this program, that they'll be looking at other dimensions, if you will, other corridors of concern, because there's clearly a reason, and you just touched on it talking about Houston and the social set, et cetera. There's something really wrong when you see the amount of despair amongst young men and women of color, if you will, and we apparently don't want to talk about it, don't want to deal with it. But right now, to your question about the mayor, Mayor Carter has a crisis, just as the Mayor Fry, who is white, Jewish, has a problem in Minneapolis, if you will. I'm just watching to see where the leadership will come from. But most importantly, gentlemen, what solutions are they going to be recommending? Okay, you know, with regards to getting the guns off the street. I repeat again, that as a historian, I have to remind people that this is not the first rodeo as it pertains to violence in the city of St. Paul or the city of Minneapolis. People are talking like it is something new because you can play the race card.
Well, but in, you know, in the, this is them again, you know, in the matter of guns, I mean, whenever there's, you know, obviously these sad situations we've been experiencing lately happen, you know, there's this push, okay, well, let's take away the guns. But what happens is there's a huge pushback from organizations that are so pro and use the amendment that they say covers that.
Second Amendment.
So there's always this huge pushback to, you know, saying that if you don't have your guns, you're violating our constitutional rights. So
yeah.
That's
interesting that you say that. This is Don. Gentlemen, that's interesting that Mr. Edwards, that M says this, said that, because,
yes,
you know, that's what we were talking about in the production meeting this morning, because, you know, today's show is gun control racist. And, you know, Mr. Edwards is the historian on this, but I had a comment. I said, in 2019, if they want to take folks' guns and they put it across the board, the first guns that are going are guns that are owned by people of color, more specifically black folks, okay, before they go after anybody else. But yet they can't disarm these kids, these 15, 16, 17-year-olds in St. Paul and Minneapolis, walking around randomly shooting people because they don't have a great vocabulary. So I have a problem with that, and it makes it part of the disparity and ongoing uptick in the black codes that has never went away, period. So when you look at it from that point of view, this is a dangerous time for everybody. And if Mr. Edwards had said something earlier about, you know, what idea or what plan will they execute to try to adjust this problem? And in the short time that I've been following it, from the empowerment zone in Minneapolis to the promise neighborhoods in Minneapolis and St. Paul to all these nonprofits doing this research and this money that has been dumped in, that system under the Black Codes has only provided wealth for people inside those agencies and hasn't changed the circumstances for anyone outside of the agencies that they're studying and doing reports on. We're stuck in between a rock and a hard place, is my opinion. We're stuck between a rock and a hard place, not knowing or not understanding what these people will do different, how they will do it, or is it just another payday? And I'll close with that.
Well, but is the gun, one of the things you said, Mr. Allen, you know, the gun situation seems to involve a lot of youth. And so, I mean, is one of the remedies to this thing is obtaining a gun, you have to be a certain age. I mean, I don't know. I mean, how do you curb illegal activity? Well, you know, there's always a way that people find to do that. But maybe that's a first step.
Well, let me ask you a question, Mr. Edwards. Let me ask you a quick question. To address that, I mean, what do you do? What kind of attention do you have to get from a youth in a poor or moderate income area? How do you get that person's attention to make them not look for a gun? You know what I mean? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what idea can you possibly come up with that they haven't tried already. But anyway, I'll let you guys go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, no, that you said something I think, you know, reasonably profound, and that is, you know, what other choices are offered to young men and women in the so-called inner cities, as they like to say, to want to do something different, if you will, want to explore things that are more mundane, if you will, more readily available to help you be able to live your life, a safe life, and do things which will enhance your development as a human being, irrespective of race, creed, and color. I just think that we could probably spend 3 hours on a program like this, talking in terms of the gun situation. First and foremost, nobody's going to take on the National Rifle Association. No one's going to take on the gun manufacturers. They got too much money. They got too much power. But then we're not honest, gentlemen. We're not honest in whatever the minimal debate is that takes place with regards to who will be the first to be selected to disarm, either voluntarily or involuntarily, if you will. That's something that everybody's talking in terms of 16, 19, and 400 years and et cetera. You know, Black America or the Negro America, however you want to phrase it other than the ugly word of NIG, you know, there was clearly a time in this country, even if you were a free Negro, the system didn't want you to have a gun, be able to defend yourself. I would always call attention to one of the things that's always puzzled me about the debate and the whispering that goes on is that, you know, the Second Amendment was really created to protect Caucasians against the savages, first and foremost the red savages whose land they were in the process of taking and gutting. And then secondly, a group called slaves, if you will, who were a very volatile group who were growing in numbers as it pertains to that they may possibly have been in a position to overwhelm the white population and the expected white immigration population that they were rushing to get into this country, if you will. Those are questions that you know need very intense and honest discussion and reflection. I just don't know if we are really honest enough. Because I have to say to you, that I'm not giving my gun up, okay, for a lot of reasons, none of which have to do with anything that causes me to be afraid, quote unquote, of my own people. But there are others that I'm afraid of. So I'm just saying that and laying that out on this program as an example. We have earned the right to be able to embrace the Second Amendment as the sons and daughters of the African, if you will. And I'll be doggone if I will encourage anybody to give up their weapon until we have certain changes in the conditions of this country and our relationships and the divide. And let me just close with this on that particular point. Very interesting article a couple of days ago on the 8th in the Minneapolis Star Tribune talking about a divided Minnesota. And gentlemen, I was really disappointed because I was one of the ones that was interviewed. They sought me out, interviewed me for almost 2 hours. And then I was told yesterday when the question came up of why I was one of those that was jettisoned was that the Star Tribune changed, quote unquote, the eligibility, if you will, to determine who it was could speak on the problems and the division that exist in the state of Minnesota along the lines of race. And I was offended really by that because this is the game that's always played. But to keep the conversation flowing and maybe a little bit heated, I got to tell you, I'm a black man who has no intention of giving up his weapons.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, that's similar, you know, the statement that you made kind of reminds me of the, you know, the North Korea situation with the United States. I mean, they want them to disarm. They want them to disarm. And they're like, well, you disarm then. You know, why should I disarm if you're not going to disarm? Where are you going to have? So, I mean, that's the type of standoff that I think exists. But you know, when you take it a little bit farther, it would be helpful if somehow we could preach to kids and, you know, that the threat of the use of that weapon, what that can do, you know, so that they can begin to really grasp, you know, what that means. I mean, that this means this could be the end of you by using this gun, you know?
Absolutely.
So that they realize how serious, mm-hmm. you know, that you know, the use and what the responsibility is of a person that has one in their possession. So I think that's sorely lacking with the youth, for sure.
Yeah. No doubt about it. And I find it interesting that I think this is one of the few programs I've really heard in years in which a statement has been made, and we've been honest enough, at least I certainly have, to indicate that there has to be significant consideration and concessions by both sides in order to talk in terms of disarmament here in the United States. I just have too much history and knowledge about places like Tulsa and Roswell, Florida, and Duluth, Minnesota, and, you know, Oklahoma and Texas and Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia. Just too many times that things happen and the African-American or the Negro was not adequately prepared to defend themselves. Gentlemen, I still think in terms of the bombing of black row houses just 20-some years ago in Philadelphia. And I still think and remind people of the destruction of, quote-unquote, the black communities of Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921. I just have an uneasy feeling. It's only mine. Your point is well made, Jim, with regards to, you know, the Rocket Man, as they like to call him. But you got to remember, that little yellow man resides in a part of the world which was the only place that nuclear. In fact, two nuclear bombs, called atomic bombs back then, were dropped
yeah.
on people. I always wondered how come they
yeah.
didn't drop any nuclear weapons on the Germans.
Yeah.
Yeah. But appreciated him. I don't know if we got any other calls, Don, because this, I think, is an interesting conversation, and I welcome the challenge. You know, is at what price should we pay?
We have just have to thank you. We're fine. Go ahead. Yes, we do
okay.
have people holding in the
yeah.
queue with me. We're fine.
All right.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jim.
Well, you know,
okay, well,
I think your point is, you know, on this gun thing. I mean, we just, you know, really can't seem to get a grip on. You know, we look at our movies. We look at how cavalier people shoot guns, and for some reason, a lot of those people only get winged in the arm. I never understood
right.
that. How can people be such good shots? They can just wing you in the arm, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to really, you know, teach reality to our kids. And I mean, it even goes a lot farther than that. I mean, think some of the practical things that they need to know to live. You know, just like parenting. You know, having kids at 15, 16, 17. I mean, to be able to be kids, and I think they're exposed to so many things now that, you know, they're seeing many things that they shouldn't be seeing, at least that I know I wasn't allowed to see when I was a kid. And a lot of, you know, like what you're saying, Mr. Edwards, it kind of goes back to what we've seen in life. You know, when you're talking about, you know, your gun and the violence we've had here, I thought about my grandmother. And the reason I thought about her is because she lived through the Depression. So, I mean, she had canned goods. She had an arsenal of things in her basement, you know, and it was just her and my grandfather. But because she had lived in that time, you know, she was going to always stay prepared. So I think our task is big to kind of mesh the new with the you know, with the old.
I agree. It calls for, you know, intense, in-depth, and honest discussion. All right, Ann, thank you.
All right.
Thanks for the call. So,
yeah,
Mr. Edwards, I have...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I have someone on social media that has a question for you. She wants to know, is the violence in Minneapolis because of minors with guns or adults?
The violence
in Minneapolis.
I mean, let's be very,
okay,
very candid. The violence in Minneapolis is a combination of many, many different things. And that, you know, starts with, quote-unquote, tribal, territorial, the availability of weapons of destruction, if you will, and the gentleman M just kind of put his finger on it. The need by young people, but also older people, because there's, you know, it comes from both sides. But the lack of trust that has emerged, in which people are saying, you know, homie, my brother, I got to be armed, man, because I can't go up and down the street in my neighborhood, you understand, unless I got protection. And you know, and I know there are folks that can come forward and use the argument that's not logical, that's not rational, that's not an excuse, and et cetera. But I maintain that all of the above are a part of what exists within a society. And I don't know, Don, we are becoming meaner as a society to the question raised by the young lady. We are becoming meaner, if you will. But at the same time, we are as a base, as a race, as a group. And when I say race, I'm talking about everybody, black, white, red. That folks just feel that a weapon is something that, quote-unquote, is an obligation to have. Okay, and man, that is frightening. But I say this before, you know, we unfortunately, maybe if we were in Europe, we could have a more intellectual kind of conversation. We have to understand that it was the gun, the weapon, that allowed this nation to be created, and that allowed quote unquote genocide to be carried out against the original inhabitants, the indigenous people. See, we don't talk about that either. It's like, well, you know, 75 million Native Americans over a period of 500 years or thereabouts were slaughtered, disappeared, and et cetera. And that's their problem. Modernized. Go ahead.
You're absolutely correct, Mr. Edwards, because if you think about it, layered up, and I was just, while you were talking, I was thinking about the space movie that I watched the other night. And every planet that this ship went to, the first thing they did was pull out its gun and kill the inhabitants. Okay? And then they went down and landed and put the people in there. And that's an ongoing historical construct that happens, that's been happening. And, art imitates life in this matter, because you're looking at the black community, you're looking at the white community. You're seeing this spread in, well, let me just put it, there's a gap where there shouldn't be a gap if everything that's on paper was true. You know, like we're fair with this, inclusive, diversity, inclusion, et cetera. But it's not like that. And I'm stuck at a point where I don't understand it. I don't understand the violence. I don't understand the solution and the continued merry-go-round of that. We're going to do this now and it's going to work. Or we're going to do that now, solving the problem from the top down. They're really not solving it. So I just think they create new social groups, and that's about it.
Right. Well, if we have anybody who's holding that once has an opinion, we have now short the time. We're moving into the last to 20-some minutes. But it's a heck of a question. But I just have not heard anybody, you know, tell me or guarantee me that, quote-unquote, give up my weapon and you'll protect me,
We have a caller from the Midwest live on the air with us now. Mr. Edwards, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, good morning. This is Steve from the Midwest.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
Good. I'd like to ask Mr. Edwards, I know in the past you've mentioned that you have been a member of the NRA. Are you still a member? And I just wondered what your experience has been with the NRA.
They are not very, don't take very kindly to people of color finding a way to become members, card-carrying members of the National Rifle Association, if you will. In fact, the chapter that was created here in 1960 was really done with a certain level of trickery, because the NRA back then misidentified the individual who filed the petition to have the charter created, if you will. It was the Samuel Falk Brigade, if you will. And yet there were a number of veterans and et cetera. In fact, some of the arguments in support of why there should be National Rifle Association in the Twin Cities at a time when tensions were beginning to raise, there were some very profound points made. But yes, that chapter, quote unquote, actually technically still exists.
Oh, okay. And I was just also wondering, what do you think of the NRA today as an organization? Because I have my opinion is it's basically become kind of a white nationalist organization now. But what's your opinion? Yeah. Well, I mean, they've got people
I concur.
You know,
I concur.
Yeah.
We felt in 1960 it was a white organization then. I used the term trickery. There was a certain level of trickery that was used, and they misidentified the individual making application for the creation of a charter, and that was the gentleman who was a member of the United States Army Air Corps. Again, his name was Samuel Falk. He's deceased. He's been deceased now for about 20 years. Served with the late Dr. Thomas Johnson, who a lot of people here still remember. Dr. Johnson was a major in the United States Army Medical Corps stationed in Liberia and Northern Africa. But, you know, we're taking up some valuable time with regards to that. But to not stepping away from your inquiry, I thought in 1960 that the NRA was a very racist organization. It's one of the reasons that a group of 14 of us came together and agreed to apply for membership and hoping to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Yeah, I was just wondering because I know that they've got some board members who've made some statements in the past, particularly Ted Nugent. Yeah, in particular. Who's made some terrible. Yeah, he's still on the board, and he's made some incredible racist statements in the past. And I was just wondering. Also, do you think this whole thing is kind of you kind of mentioned it, but is it a prelude to taking away guns in the black community now? I mean, is this what it's basically turned into?
Yes. Yeah. There are documents, communiques that have been circulated in the in and around the National Rifle Association, NRA, in which there has been that discussion. Their coded language is of course, used, and this has been going on for about 30, 35 years, if you will. They have been nervous because one of the discussions that has gone on over the last 20-some years is that just what will be the conflict that will emerge as if, you know, the recall of weapons under the so-called provisions of the Second Amendment could lead to civil uprisings and et cetera. And I agree that that is what will happen. I also agree that that is what should happen if, in fact, you do not voluntarily surrender your weapon, because the last time I looked, the Second Amendment, gentlemen, did not say anything about the fact that the Caucasian race in a place called the United States, under the auspices of the Constitution and its amendments, had absolute priority and consideration to be armed and everybody else, quote unquote, be dependent upon them to protect you. See, that's the vision. If the Founding Fathers really wanted to make it a white proposition, then they should have put that in there, that the Second Amendment and that piece of the Second Amendment, which talks in terms of the right to bear arms, should be codified to indicate that this is only for, quote unquote, Caucasians. And so that wasn't done. And you'd be surprised over the last 20 years, the kind of whispering conversations that have gone on amongst people like Nugent and others, in which they maintained that that was a tactical error that was made with regards to, removing, quote-unquote, the right of the red, black, yellow to bear arms under the provisions of the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
But right now, there is a real discussion. If you go to some of the, and I know your people, Steve, I have the capabilities of doing that. Mr. Allen on our team has the ability to do that. If you go to some of the right-wing websites and you really know what you're looking for and, you know, you come in kind of through the back door and et cetera, you'd be scared to death about what is being discussed about the disarming, quote-unquote, of certain groups or base if you will, in the United States. It's a very dangerous situation. But I do not equivocate nor move away from your question. Is that all of this stuff about the guns and you know, surrender your weapon and et cetera, it's a part of a greater plan.
Yeah,
dangerous. Very dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I wonder, too, also the Democratic Party, do you think they're kind of playing into the hands of a lot of these white right-wing groups now with all the gun control
on the issue of the Second Amendment?
Gun
control and such. It's only one person's opinion. I clearly believe that that's what they're doing. In fact, I'd like to see them, particularly Booker and Harris, I'd like to see them force their and Castillo. I would like to see them force, quote unquote, the Caucasian members and candidates for the nomination. I'd like to see them really have an honest discussion about once this happens. And let me say why. Once this change happens, this amendment to the amendment, you know. Here in Minnesota, we have been quietly reviewing, have gained access to certain databases. You'd be surprised, sir, although I know the part of the country that you're in, Steve, you'd be surprised at the number of applications that are denied for African Americans, Native Americans, and et cetera, who apply for permits. You'd be surprised. The reason is, gentlemen, in each and every county, the authority, the sole authority is who? The white sheriff.
No, I was just that was basically my last question. I was just wondering about the Democrats and this push. And according to polling also, the country's kind of moving toward far more restrictive gun laws. So I was just wondering about that.
And we will, the sons and daughters of the African, will be the first targets to quote unquote surrender our weapons. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Allen, you were kind of quiet there. You were listening heavily, but what's your thinking, sir?
I was looking at, I think we have another call here, Mr. Evers. Stand by. I was just getting a text through, though. Caller, last 4457, you're live on the air. Go ahead. What's your comment?
Just wondering, do you guys think this poor gun lobby, with their little bit of money and backers, do you think they'll be able to handle this issue? Do you guys really think you're going to have to go to bat for them? I got a feeling that they'll take care of this, guys. You may be a little afraid on this one, but I don't think this will have much cachet. The Dems typically talk like this during times of tragedy, but as weeks go by and the funding comes in and the lobbying firms come to visit, there's actually no meat and bones or real legislation. So I wouldn't worry, guys. Now my question to you, though, this talk earlier about...
Which one? You, Mr. Allen or myself?
Oh, both. Both.
Oh, okay. Okay. Go ahead.
So... when you get those more, 14 more cops or whatever it is they're talking about doing down there, when you get these extra cops, what gives you the idea that that changes the direction of crime in any way? Like, where would the correlation be for more cops? Actually, you're talking about, as conservatives, I'm kind of disappointed, talking about raising the budget and more pensions, more pension liabilities for the city. That's going to give you the same outcome. Like, if you want to look at crime, the things to look at would be, and you guys know about this from the Diamond Lake stuff from the 20s, as far as housing segregation in Minneapolis and how this place is constructed. So if you look at housing prices right now or what people are paying for rent locally, which is probably the best indicator, and then looking at wages and stagnation, and how many people are living on the margins, then, yeah, you're going to have a rise in crime. But if you put some more badges on folks, I don't think that that's going to really turn the tide on this. So I don't know, man. You conservative folk, y'all done depressed me today, man. I turned y'all on, and boy, I'm sad now.
Actually, brother, we're actually on the same page as far as, you know, as what you're talking about. I don't believe until some other factors, provisions, statutes, and et cetera are changed, if you will. I don't think that more police necessarily will change anything, but if one is out here, boots on the ground, as we like to say, and you see just how thin the line of protection is, because now, you know, your alternative, my brother, is, you know, just put together the group that they had many years ago, about a years ago in San Francisco, and just, you know, make yourselves vigilantes and see how that works, if you will. Only problem is in the black community, the vigilante crew would basically be run by the drug dealers. Because your first opening statement was, is there really enough money to go around? And we know how the system works on that because we know who controls the flow of drugs into urban America, if you will. In other words, black America and other Americans of color. But actually, we're on the same page. We're just trying to hold out hope that there will be those on the other side that will. Everybody's talking about, you know, hands across the sea and you know, no more division and et cetera. We were a nation born of division, you know. The division started when the folks came ashore at Jamestown, my brother. But,
indeed.
You know, that's a conversation for another time.
Yeah, indeed. Well, look, you gentlemen have a good day, man.
It is what it is.
But if we really want to explore these options, we have to do it in non-traditional ways. And these are going to be caused by community action, and not community action in the form of going to meetings and clapping and going to church every once in a while and hearing good speeches.
Oops.
In the form of people actually deciding that their lives are interlinked and they have to choose a different route. This individualism by a group with the smallest amount of wealth within a capitalist society is a losing battle. And you can walk around it as many ways as you want to, but you'll come back to that same spot 5 years
absolutely.
Later.
And let me say it to you this way. In your situation, your case, I don't know where you're calling from, Minneapolis, Atlanta, or whatever. One of the things you may want to do, make sure you acquire a little bit more ammunition. I'm talking about the real ammunition. All right? Thank you. Appreciate
understood.
It. Understood.
Thank you. Yeah, Mr. Edwards, their caller, he's right on point. He's on point. You're absolutely correct. You can add 100 more police officers. It will not change what's going on because there's an economic component of it. There's an educational component of it that nobody's looking at all whatsoever.
Absolutely. And I thought he was jostling with us a little bit, maybe pulling our leg. If he's been listening to us over the last number of years, he knows that that we on the Ride and Die program well understand those quote unquote pathways and whatever else you want to call it that you just enunciated. You know, I'm just afraid, if you will, that we are in a situation, particularly with the embracing the love affair between the current president of the United States and quote unquote the so-called far right. I just don't think we're going to see anything in our lifetime. Now our children and grandchildren may, but you know one of the things is absent Don, and maybe that'll be for a program next week. You know there have been times when this country has had some voices that have tried to bring reason, clarity, and et cetera. And, you know, I'm talking in terms of the Malcolm X's and Martin Luther King Jr.'s, but on the white side, the Kennedys and others. You know, I don't see that kind of impactful voice out there right now. You know, in other words, I don't see a Nelson Mandela or Gandhi, you know, a Bishop Tutu and et cetera. But maybe they're on the horizon. But I think you've seen it. I've seen it. the indicators, we always talk about indicators, would seem to signal that things are really getting worse for the sons and daughters of the Africans.
Yep, you're right. Thank you.
All right. Take us home. Take care.